Then when I went to Anandagiri, again I met him there. You know, he was in Anandagiri there, I think for a few weeks or months. Then I think his good parami, huh? He managed to get this Pyeongchang, can you record? He got the parami to receive the consent of Achananand to become his preceptor. That is a very, very wholesome affinity. Not easy to be ordained under Achananand. He don't simply become preceptor for people. There must be affinity, otherwise he will not agree. Then also, I think, because he knows Achan Achalo. Achalo is one of his disciples, and he's very close to Achananda. So because of all those affinity, that's why finally when I heard the news that you are going to be ordained there under him, my nature rejoiced. Then somehow he just called me a few days back. He texted me first, can I come to your Tuesday class? I said, can, sure, you can come. Then suddenly, today he appeared. Then also because you all have affinity. So first time you have the opportunity or occasion to make offering to a Kayanamita who is going for ordination in about 3 weeks time. So let us rejoice and wish him all the very best in his whatever pursue after the ordination. Then like Pamasri say, after he come back, we will have to address him, Achan. So you all have great affinity. The parami is very great. You can make offering to somebody before his ordination. It's a very, very wholesome offering, because you never know what will happen to him. Understand? Chances is, if he has the determination, the faith, the understanding, especially as one of your Kayamita who has the understanding, he will do well. And he has the roots. He has his past parami. So let us rejoice. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. So this is pre-ordination, which is very good, very wholesome. So we would like to actually rejoice with all this wholesomeness. And all of us would like to really wish you all the very best so that you can progress beautifully along the path of Dhamma. The moment you ordain, you become different. Your preceptor will teach you a lot of things. I think you have read up some of the things too. Then a lot of other things, if you were to follow with understanding, mindfully, it will help you in your cultivation. Because precept is your greatest teacher. If you can be mindful of precept, you will be heedful of life. If you cannot be mindful of precept, you cannot be heedful of life. So initially when you are under training, this mindfulness is very important. It constantly reminds you to be heedful. Otherwise you cannot give your precept. As a monk, it's not 5 or 8, it's 227. To remember is not easy. So a lot of things you have to be very, very mindful, in the sense that you undertake the training rule to abstain. It's not about the precept. It's about how you train your mind to have that mindfulness, the awareness. When you can have the determination to undertake the training rule to be aware of this, which means you can make that determination for whatever you want in life, and you will observe it very well. That's why precepts, if you know how to really observe it, it will be a very, very powerful tool for you to progress. Because everything starts with precepts. Without precept, you cannot move. That's why you need sila. And with sila, like vichana, silena sukantingyanti, silena boga sabbadan, silena nibantingyanti. These three things that are very useful will come along. Precept is the source of spiritual peacefulness, spiritual happiness, joy, and spiritual you will receive that type of spiritual wealth, spiritual wealth. So that spiritual wealth is very useful. First is spiritual joy, then spiritual peacefulness of mind. So these two are very conducive for meditation. Then spiritual wealth is the one that will bring forth the teaching to you, bring forth all the spiritual benefit. Yu Chan, see, our friend is here. Wei Shen, Kwan San, he's going for ordination. June 12th, yeah. So you are going when?
I go August.
Oh, okay. So there, when you are there, he's a monk there. You have to pay respect, address him as Achan. But what name you don't know yet? Let him give you a very good Dhamma name. He, Achan Anand, will know. He will give you the appropriate one. Then when you come back, you let us know. So you can actually develop a lot of understanding from your name. Because that is something related to your dislikes for my mind's nature. Then not only the name, it's also how when they shape, they do the process, they will explain to you. Then the first thing I remember they will teach you is the 32 parts of your body. You have to reflect and contemplate. The first five is very useful. So all this, the Thai tradition is quite good, especially the forest tradition. So how many of you? You are the only one. Oh, you don't know. You let them let you know. Because sometimes it could be a few together. They arrange it on the same day. If you are the only one, then you are the lucky one. Means he is doing it specially for you. Yeah, seek permission. Yeah, that day. Oh, sadhu, your birthday. Oh, no wonder he accept. Ah, sadhu. Then you could be the only one. So okay, let us rejoice one more time. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Then we can start our puja offering now. Okay, come. Then we get today, maybe song come. You teach vision how to do. You stand behind Brother Song. He will make offering. Then I will rejoice. Then he'll pass to you. Then you pass on. Sadhu, 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 sadhu. Sadhu, 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 sadhu. Sadhu, 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 sadhu. Sadhu, sadhu. Sadhu, 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 sadhu.Sadhu, 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 sadhu, 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 sadhu. Okay, we shall offer the rest of the offering, yeah? Sadhu.Sadhu, sadhu, 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 sadhu. Okay, y'all can be seated. So today is the 21st of May, huh?Tuesday class. We just had our puja offering. Yeah? Now we're going to start the puja chanting. So for the benefit of a few of you who just came in, huh? Tonight we had the opportunity, yeah, to have Vision, Kwan sister from Klang. He's going for ordination next month, 12 of June, which is his birthday too.So let us wish him, a wish that is 3 weeks later. Happy birthday to Vision. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Also happy ordination. Then after that, you become different. You will officially become in the Theravada tradition. Samanera first. I don't think so. I think he straight away can ordain. But he has been Samanera for quite a while. He stayed with Achan Achalo for a few weeks there. Then he was at what? Machap Achananda for quite a while with it. So it depends. I think ordained means they will ordain you into monkhood very likely. Unless they feel that you are not steady, then you have to go through samanera. Then after that, they will check with you whether you are ready or not. But this one, I think he made up his decision long ago. You applied long ago, and they already agreed. So for our part, I have on behalf of all Kayamita, use our Kayamita fund to make an offering to Vishen, so you all can rejoice too. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Then, like what we did just now, we wish him all the best. Then, we believe with his parami, with his ability to understand a lot of important dhamma before he even ordained, he should do very well. And we are proud to say this is the first Kayamita going for. So this is the real ordination Kayamita. But for the rest of you, like I mentioned just now, don't be envy. Because you already ordained when you have the dhamma inside. When you determine to go this way, you are already a monk inwardly. If you are lady, then you are a nun. Because the real cultivation is inside. But the Theravada tradition and the Mahayana tradition, it has its meaning too. Sometimes if you do it with understanding, your faith very strong, it will really make a big difference. Then when you start to become monk, you will behave differently because you have a lot of duty. You have a lot of what they call Vinaya rules to observe. So these Vinaya rules are monk's rule. It's no longer 5 precepts or 8 precepts or even Samanera 10 precepts. It's 227. Then you learn to use the rope. Are you familiar with the rope? Very good. Okay. That means you already ready. Sri Lanka style, yeah. Oh, no problem. That one is forest tradition. That one, they make it more tight. I saw Ajayantra. Oh, he really, he twist and twist and twist and twist until very tight. Then when he put on the robe, so elegant. I saw that robe. Really elegant. And his robe, he kept it very well. He kept it very well. There's a lot of the other side of the story that you seldom hear of. The life of a monk. When you become a monk, it's a lot of different because you will see the big difference when you cross over from a worldly lay person into an ordained monk. Because as a worldly or what we call Buddhajana, before the ordination, you don't have to follow so many rules. The Vinaya rules are not applicable. So your life is different. Then you tend to live with your family and do the thing that you normally do while in society. But the moment you ordain, depending on the training of the temple, you are totally on your own. On your own, even the place you sleep, the place you are allowed to move around or develop the meditation. Then you have your duty, they will allocate duties to you too. Then you have your routine, your daily routine. You have to wake up quite early, but you will get used to it very fast. Then with the faith, you will progress very fast because it's like people say, you can now have the condition full time to reflect, to contemplate, to develop the cultivation. But always remember to be worthy of offering. Do not take this for granted, understand? You have to cultivate. When you cultivate, when you are worthy of offering, you receive tremendous merits. Because that is what renunciation is all about. Even as a lay person, when you cultivate, when you are worthy of respect, offering, you become different. Especially as a monk, because you cannot work. You cannot, like normal people, try to make money and all those things. So when you go through that way of life, the Buddha designed it in such a way that you have to go pindapath. You have to survive based on offering from people. So sometimes you don't have the parami when you don't receive any offering for the day. I was told by certain monks, for that day they don't eat. But for you, I think, okay, you will be most of the time at Ajahnan's place. Normally, the first 3 years at least, you have to stay with him. So 3 years is long enough training. Then after that, he will send you somewhere. Then it depends on the condition. So you will learn a lot of new things, which is, to me, if you have the faith, it's very good, no problem. Then when you can develop that understanding, that you really have to strive on your heedfulness, so that you are worthy of offering, means receiving all these requisites, and receiving whatever offering from people. Then the four things that people normally offer to monks, they are very useful. Han is here. Okay, we start the chanting because Han is here. Come. We waited for you. Okay. Namo Bansi Si Jia Moni Fo. Namo Bansi Si Jia Moni Fo. Namo Bansi Si Jia Moni Fo. Namo Quan Si Im Pusa. Namo Quan Si Im Pusa. Namo Quan Si Im Pusa. Namo Ami Tho Fo. Namo Ami Tho Fo. Namo Ami Tho Fo. Namo Mi La Fo. Namo Mi La Fo. Namo Mi La Fo. Namo Pusien Pusa. Namo Pusien Pusa. Namo Pusien Pusa. Namo Di Zhang Wang Pusa. Namo Di Zhang Wang Pusa. Namo Di Zhang Wang Pusa. Namo Fo Pusa. Namo Fo Pusa. Namo Fo Pusa. Arahang Sama Sambuddho Bhagava Buddhang Bhagavantang Abhivademi. Swakato Bhagavata Dhammo Dhammang Namasami. Supatipanno Bhagavato Sakkasangho Sanghang Namami. Okay, you can be seated. Then turn the page one of the chanting book. We will chant from the Vandana onward. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sama Sambuddhasa. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sama Sambuddhasa. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sama Sambuddhasa. Buddhang saranang gacchami, Dhammang saranang gacchami, Sanghang saranang gacchami, Dutiyampi buddhang saranang gacchami, Tutiyampi dhammang saranang gacchami. Tutiyampi sanghang saranang gacchami. Tatiyampi buddhang saranang gacchami. Tatiyampi dhammang saranang gacchami. Tatiyampi sanghang saranang gacchami. Panatipata viramane sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Adinadana viramane sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Dhammesu micchacara viramane sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Musavada viramane sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Suramiraya majjhapamadatana viramane sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Now we will chant the Padipa Puja, offering of light. Ganna sarapa dittena, dittena tamadang sina, tiloka dipang sambuddhang, pujayami tamonudang. Ganda sambarayutena, dopena hang sugang hina, pujaye pujaniyang tang, puja bhajana mutamang. Vanna ganda guno petang, etang putsuma santatin, pujayami munindasa, siri pada sarorohe. Puje mi buddhang kusumena nena, punnena matena cha hotu mokhang. Pupang milayati itla idang me, kayo tatayati vinasabhavang. Adivase tunobante, paniyang parikapitang, anukampang upadaya, patigan hatu mutamang. Adivase tunobante, pale parikapitang, anukampang upadaya, patigan hatu mutamang. Adivase tunobante, bojanang parikapitang, anukampang upadaya, patigan hatu mutamang. Now we will chant the puja aspiration based on our understanding of the significance of all this puja offering. Significance of offering of light. May this offering of light to the Buddha brings forth the causes and conditions to illuminate our mind, to help arise the needed clarity and understanding to dispel darkness or ignorance. Significance of offering of water. May this offering of pure, clear, cool water lead us to the pure, clear Dhamma that cools and doses off the fires of all defilements within our mind. Significance of offering of incense. May our morality, virtue, and understanding shine forth far and wide, just like the fragrance of this incense, which we are offering to the Blessed One, who is perfect in wisdom and virtue. Significance of offering of fruits. May this offering of fruits remind us of the Dana Parami of generosity and the fruit of our karma, so that we will diligently strive on with heedfulness to attain the path and fruition soon as possible. Significance of offering of flowers. May this constant offering of flowers to the Blessed One strengthen our faith and constantly remind us of the impermanence of this body, so that we will diligently and sincerely strive on to cultivate Sila, Samadhi and Panya, leading to ultimate liberation, the bond-free Nibbana, making of overall aspiration. By the power of all these merits, born of these offerings, may our spiritual faculties of Sada, Virya, Sati, Samadhi and Panya be further strengthened until they become balas or powers, then sharing and transfer merits to all beings. May these merits be shared and transferred to all beings without exception, especially to those who have the condition and affinity to receive them. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, let us pay respect, Triple Gem. Padang Pujemi Dhammang Pujemi Sanghang Pujemi. Okay, you can be seated. Just relax body and mind. Then we will have about 20 minutes of silent meditation. Just relax body and mind. Yeah? We are off the light. I will set the alarm. Then you can have your silent meditation. Yeah. Just relax body and mind, yeah, and silent everything. Those who need to train their mind, huh? You can go ahead. Huh? For those who already know how to meditate, just relax, silent, and just allow the mind to settle down. Then everything will go back to stillness. Then from the silent mind, just maintain awareness to understand clearly what is going on within your own form and mind. As a human being, the Buddha said, we have a physical body that has the senses. Then you have a consciousness or mundane mind that resides in your heart. So this consciousness, upon contact, they will arise the respective sense door consciousness. Then if you are aware within, at the moment of contact, a lot of things will happen. Then when they arise, you can also be aware and mindful of whatever that is going on, or the movements. Especially how the content of consciousness went in, and how this content of consciousness, before you had the wisdom, the initial wisdom, yoniso manasikara, how it will condition your mind to react or respond accordingly. So all this is meditation when you understand. Then when you can just maintain awareness, whatever that arises, aware, finish, let it settle down. And if you can do that more and more, your mind will become very quiet, very still. Then all of the sankhara movement, they will slow down. then within that clarity, the awareness, the silent mind can understand many things. That's why you use that silent mind to be aware. Don't try to know. The understanding will come by itself. Okay, I'll let you meditate on your own. you can slowly, mindfully come out of meditation and try to maintain whatever inner peace, inner calmness, and inner awareness that you have developed for as long as you can. These are the meditative states that you need to carry them over into your daily life so that you can have the ability to be ever mindful in the midst of life, leading to heedfulness. Okay, turn to page 6. We will chant the invocation to the devas. Invocation to the devas. In this universe in their entirety, let the deities or devas come here. Let them hear the good teaching of the King of Sages, which gives heaven and release, Nibbana. This is the time to listen to the teaching. This is the time to listen to the teaching. This is the time to listen to the teaching. Samanta chakavalisu atra gacchantu devata saddhammam muni rajasa sunantu sakamokkhadam Dhamma savanan kalo ayam badanta. Dhamma savanan kalo ayam badanta. Dhamma savanan kalo ayam badanta. Namo atasa bhagavato arahato sama sambuddhasa. Namo atasa bhagavato arahato sama sambuddhasa. Namo atasa bhagavato arahato sama sambuddhasa. Iti peso bhagava arahang sama sambuddho. Vijja charana sampanno sugato lokavido anuttaro purisa dhamma sarati satta deva manusanam buddho bhagavati. Swakato bhagavata dhammo sanditiko akaliko ehipaseko opanayiko pachyatang veditabo vinohiti. Supatipanno bhagavato savakasangho ujjupatipanno bhagavato savakasangho nyayapatipanno bhagavato savakasangho samicipatipanno bhagavato savakasangho yadidam chatari purisa yukani atta purisa pugala esa bhagavato savakasangho ahuneyo pahuneyo dakineyo anjali karaniyo anutarang punyaketang lokasati. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, let us be respect, Triple J. Patang Pajami. Damang Pajami. Sanghang Pajami. Okay, you all can be seated. Then we can continue from where we stop. We are at page 465, the Buddha and his teaching. We were at King Melinda's question, the last paragraph there. So the last paragraph before King Melinda's question is about the analogy or the simile of a flame. That one they use it. A simile to them is very striking. It's alive is compared to a flame. Rebirth is the transmitting of this flame from one group to another. The flame of life is continuous, although there is an apparent break, so-called death. So this part is quite a good simile. That's why they say life after life, we continue. According to the teaching, it's slightly different from the flame. The flame means this flame, which could be a candle. When this flame is blown off, then they say the flame no more. So it's just like life, no more. But the candle analogy we have gone through last time, there are three possibilities as to how the candle light or the flame of the candle can cease to be. First is when you're weak, the manufacturing got problem, then it burned for a while, then it started to spark. Then the flame doesn't continue because there is defective, weak. It's like your DNA, some of your organ, vital organ, not properly designed, or it doesn't come with the appropriate DNA. So certain lifespan, it starts to develop problem, then the condition that supported the arising of this human being or living being or forming mind no more. So it's like the flame gone. The second possibility is the wax. When the wax is not the usual wax, some of wax are very soft, they burn very fast. So when the wax is no more, it is also not able to sustain the flame, so it's gone. Then the third possibility is external factor, the wind blow or something else caused the flame to go. So in the actual sense of a living being, the Buddha also explained it in a similar way. He said three things or the three conditions must be there for life to sustain itself. First, there must be a physical body. that is functional, means without problem, like a car without problem. Then there must be this consciousness that can reside inside. Then the third vital condition is there must be this life force or the karmic force from our karmic nature. This one must come and pump the heart. Yeah. So any of these three not there, then the conditions is to be this human being or living being, they cannot sustain itself. Like karmic force, destructive karma come, no more karmic force, the heart beat stop. Then this consciousness has to separate from the physical body, because the physical body will die. That's why the doctor say when you are without heartbeat, within don't know how many minutes you will die. Because when there is not enough blood to nourish your organ, when your heart doesn't pump. So during that time, very fast, your vital organ will fail. Then when your vital organ fail, your consciousness can no longer stay inside, because it doesn't have the property or ability to sustain it. So this consciousness has to leave. That's why they say death occur. So any of the three conditions, sometimes the consciousness is still there, the life force is there, but the physical body has this, what they call destructive elements, means like car accident or nature's disaster or somebody drown or sophist, they call it when they put chloroform on you and knock you out, then sometimes they strangle you. So when the physical organ get damaged, then that life force that sustain the thing can no longer make use of it to sustain life. So the consciousness also has to leave. And when the consciousness leave, or let's say the vital organ like the heart has a heart attack, then the life force can come, but it cannot pump the heart anymore because the heart has failed. Then sometimes it's the brain, spinal cord injury or whatever. So any of this condition, once it's no more, the form and mind cease to be, and we call it death. So in that sense, we have to understand that this physical body of ours, or every living being, is impermanent, dependent, originating, supported by the three conditions that sustain life. Any other condition, no more, it will cease to be. So that is the first aspect that we need to develop understanding. Then the second aspect is rebirth. So what they give as an analogy is rebirth is like this flame is still burning, but you use it to light another candle. Then that flame continue, but with a new candle. You understand? It's just like you take rebirth. The consciousness goes over, like that flame. Then you have a new candle, new wax, new wick. The analogy is quite good, the simile is quite good, but it's not the actual reflection of what happened. According to the Buddha, nothing gets transmigrated. There is no such thing as a permanent soul, a permanent unchanging entity that move on. No. The Buddha said, the form and mind before, which is still alive, before rebirth take place, this former mind must die first. So there is a death consciousness. The death consciousness is the dying consciousness at the moment of death. Means after that, the consciousness separate no more already. Yeah. Then the condition that supported that former mind ceased to be. So this rebirth consciousness, the moment it crosses over, it will condition. This death consciousness, the last thought moment, death consciousness, when it crosses over, it will condition rebirth consciousness. So the rebirth consciousness is a new consciousness, but conditioned by the death consciousness and conditioned by your karmic nature. So this phase is very fast, very fast. And it's immediate. So rebirth has taken place. But the former mind that died, it still has its process. Means the realm of consciousness that stay inside, when there is no more condition for it to stay inside, to sustain itself, it will dissipate and come together and it will leave the body. It will leave the body. So if you have the awareness, you can see this process happening during death. So at the moment of death, how these three areas of consciousness come back into one, then this random of consciousness, because the craving force that bind the consciousness to this physical body is no more. So when the craving force is no more, dissipated, this consciousness can leave the body. Otherwise it cannot leave the body. So a lot of people, they talk about out-of-body experience. There are actually two possibilities. One is the astral body, A-S-T-R-A-L, not our astro TV on, astral body. That one is a small fraction of your body, the mind, come out. So that one, when it come out, it can like go astral traveling. Then it has this movement. But try to avoid that. Don't play with that. You play with that, you can get into trouble. The other one is the death process. Then when the body is very weak, when you are very sick, about to die, your life force is all very weak, then the craving force will start to dissipate. Then when it dissipates, this consciousness that is trapped inside can come out, because there is no more craving force to bind it to the physical body. Then when this one come out, you actually die. That's why this is also another out-of-body experience. Then when you are up there, you can see everything that is down there, what people do with your body. Then your senses are very clear, at least 10 times clearer than when it's trapped inside. Unless you know how to meditate, you know how to develop awareness, then your sensitivity is also there. But when it's out of this physical body, when there is no more craving force, it is very clear, extraordinarily clear. It's like heightened awareness. But most people, the moment they experience it, they die already. But there are some who has the condition to come back to the body. For those who have the condition to come back to the body, they can share with you their experience, out-of-body experience. Then how you can develop a lot of understanding through experiencing that happening. So it's not exactly like the candlelight get passed on. It just a death consciousness that conditions a rebirth consciousness. And this rebirth consciousness is just like any single consciousness. It will go into the new form in mind. Like, if it's a human birth, then you have to wait till, I don't know how many weeks already, last time we went through, when the heart is formed. When the heart is formed, the first pulse of life come, then that karmic force that sustained that one, together with the consciousness that has crossed over, will create the condition for this new form of mind to arise. But because it's just a single mono rebirth consciousness, that's why it doesn't have much retained memory of whatever the previous life is. Then the fetus or baby go through about 9 to 10 months in the mother's womb, unless it's premature. They call it what? Early birth. Premature, I don't know what word they use. Like, you are born ahead of time. There are some who are born after 7 months. There is a word for it, I forgot the word. Whatever it is, after you are born, then by the time you become a fetus, forming into a baby, then you are born into the world. Your brain doesn't have anything. It's still pure, without memory. The cells are there, but they do not have any accumulated memory until the conditioning starts. Then the baby learns from the environment, from the person who care for them, means their guardian, or their mother, or their loved ones who care for them. Then from there, it starts to develop its memory and develop its ability to communicate, to recognize things, then to talk, to speak, to walk. So all this they learn. Then only later on, this brain become more developed, more sophisticated. Then only that human being able to conceptualize things. Then it starts to develop its own entity, identity, through accumulated memory. Then it will be able to arise thought process, their views, their conditioning, their whatever accumulated mental knowledge comes from the conditioning that it receives from the environment and from people who take care of them. So this is how the new born baby evolve and become an adult like us later on, as they grow up. They will go through the various phases of childhood. Then they go to school, have education. Then they are subject to a lot of conditioning from society, from the world, the environment, everything. Then as they continue through school, they will grow up and they will graduate from college or university. Then they will join the working life, the career life. Then they will develop into adulthood. Then after that, they may start to live their life according to whatever they want to do. If they go to marriage life, then they will start a family. Then they will have their friends, their loved ones, their parents, their grandparents. Then they will start to witness their parents and grandparents growing old, getting sick and finally die and pass away from this world. Then they themselves too will experience old age, sickness and death. So a lot of this thing is about life, about the reality. Then the teaching has all this under the Four Noble Truths as explained by the Buddha. The first Noble Truth reality, the eight reality of life and existence, when you understand them, you can relate to life, then you can understand many things. Okay, now we turn back to that page and I read on, and you can understand better. So the simile of a flame is very striking. Life is compared to a flame. Rebirth is the transmitting of this flame from one group to another. So that one I have explained. The flame of life is continuous, although there is an apparent break at so-called death. So all this we have covered there. Then King Milinda question. The king asked, Venerable Nagasena, does rebirth take place without anything transmigrating? Yes, O king, rebirth take place without anything transmigrating. Give me an illustration. This one, the Venerable Nagasena gave a very good analogy. He said, suppose, O king, a man were to light a light from light prey. Would the one light have passed over to another light? Nay, indeed, Venerable Sir. So, Venerable Nagasena explained, he said, in exactly the same way, O king, in exactly the same way, O king, thus rebirth takes place without anything transmigrating. That's why the Buddha don't believe in a soul or a permanent unchanging entity that transmigrate, means move from one body to another body. Do you know why it is not that case? If it's a soul that transmigrate, means what? Let's say now this life, let's say we have a soul inside. We will retain everything in there. Then when we are reborn into another body, we will remember everything in there. But how come you don't have memory of who you are, what you are? You can never deny that you were born from your mother's womb. Yeah. But how come the moment we are born, there is no memory? Nothing. Until the baby slowly grew up. Then some, when they have the condition, because of their very strong, what they call attachment in the past, then that subconscious or the unconscious is retained in their karmic nature. Then when they are connected in the new life, that very strong karmic conditioning, or they call the attachment, the craving, because they want to retain the memory. So from that conditioning, it will arise the causes and condition for the new. It's no more a fetus. It's by then normally it's a few years old. I think the earliest recorded one is 2-3 years old. They start to talk about their past life. Some of them are, I think, 4-5 years old, 5-6 years old. And especially when they see certain drawings or photo or what, then it will trigger off condition for them to recall. Then they can even tell their parents, is it, they stay in a place called what, that time they were, then sometimes they were soldiers or pilots killed at that time. So these are recorded history of people who has that special ability to recall. And this is possible. But nothing get transmigrated. whatever that you try to cling and hold and retain in your memory or subconscious and unconscious is to your willpower, determination. So sometimes it's adhitana, your strong vow, aspiration. That's why when you do that, when you take birth, the vow, the aspiration, or the determination, they call adhitana, they can trigger a condition for you to recall what you have vowed. That's why the bodhisattva vow and all those things are possible because of that. So these people, when they go through a very traumatic life experience before they die, if they determine through very strong will to remember because they haven't given up, these are the people who may have the condition to recall when they take new birth. But they need certain condition and maybe certain years of growing up so that they can have the ability to recall. So this analogy given by Nagasena, Venerable Nagasena, is very good. Nothing gets transmigrated. Then the king asks again, give me another illustration. Then Venerable say, do you remember, O king, having learned when you were a boy some verse or others from your teacher of poetry? Yes, Venerable sir. Pray, O king, did the verse pass over to you from your teacher? Nay, indeed, Venerable sir, in exactly the same way, O king, does rebirth take place without anything transmigrating. So that is a second example. Then again, the king asks another question. Venerable Nagasena, what is it that is born into the next existence? O king, it is body and mind, or mind and body, that is reborn into the next existence. It is this same mind and body that is born into the next existence. O king, it is not this same mind and body that is born into the next existence. But with this mind and body, O king, one does a deed. It may be good or it may be evil. And by reason of this deed, another mind and body is born into the next existence. So what Venerable Nagasena is trying to explain to the king is, depending on your karma, your action, your mental intention, the chitena that you have arisen, so it's actually your karmic nature. It will condition your next rebirth. Whatever form and mind you take depend on your karma. That's why the Buddha said we are all born of our karma, heir to our karma, conditioned and supported by the karma. And we are what we are because of karma. Well, sir, if it is not this mind and body that is born into the next existence, is one not free from one's evil deed? If one were not born into another existence, one would be free from one's evil deed. But, O king, inasmuch as one is born into another existence, therefore is one not free from one's evil deed. Give me an illustration. Then the Venerable Nagasena gave him an illustration. He said, O king, it is as if a man were to take away another man's mango, and the owner of the mango were to seize him and show him to the king and say, sir, this man had taken away my mango. And the other were to say, sir, I did not take away his mango. The mango which this man planted were different from those which I took away. I am not liable to punishment. Pray, O king, would the man be liable to punishment? So this is a worldly example. Surely, Venerable Sir, he would be liable to punishment. For what reason? Because in spite of what he might say, he would be liable to punishment for the reason that the last mango would derive from the first mango. Yeah. In exactly the same way, O King, with this mind and body, one does a deed. It may be good or it may be evil. And by reason of this deed, another mind and body is born into the next existence. Therefore, is one not free from one's evil deeds? So this is trying to explain the law of karma to the king. The Venerable Buddha Gosa elucidates this intricate point by citing the simile of echo, light, impression of a seal, and reflection in the mirror. A modern writer illustrates this process by a series of billiard balls in close contact. If, for instance, another ball is rolled against the last stationary ball, the moving ball will stop dead, and the former stationary ball will move on. The first moving ball does not pass over, it remains behind, it dies. But it is undeniably the movement of that ball, its momentum, its karma, and not any new created movement which is reborn in the foremost ball. So this one is to use the billiard ball as an example. It's quite a good analogy. It's basically talking about law of cause and effect, action and reaction. So law of physics work that way. Like you hit a ball against an object or a wall. The harder you hit, the harder is the coefficient of resolution. Means the rebound. So the rebound depends on the force you apply, and also on the wall. If the wall is very hard, the rebound is almost 90% of the energy. Yeah. That's why to every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction. That is Newton's third law. Then the law of motion, momentum, they also obey this Newton's law. So when you look at the Newton's law, it's actually pretty amazing. When I was in Form 4, when I learned the three law of Newton, I was very, very impressed actually that time. The first one is, I remember, law of motion. He said, a moving object will continue to move along the straight line unless it's resisted by something. Then the third law is, of course, cause and effect. To every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction. Then this law of motion started to develop deeper understanding into what we call physics nowadays. Then they come out with the word velocity. Velocity and speed are different. No? Speed. That's why there are two words. But basically they are the same. Then there's another word that come about because they understand. If your speed continue to increase, then there is something behind that movement. So they call it acceleration. You have to accelerate to increase your speed. If you don't accelerate, the speed cannot increase. That's why when you apply the brake, there is no more acceleration, there is deceleration. Your speed goes down. So all this come from law of nature. And law of physics is physical law. But law of karma is spiritual law. So the law of karma is different from the physical law of nature. Law of karma involves mental intention. And law of karma has different criteria. That's why when it comes to cheating people, it depends on how virtuous that person you cheat, etc. Then it also depends on how evil your mind is when you do the action, when the greed manifests. So all this is different from physical law. Physical law don't have mental intention involved. Physical law is nature's physical law that act according to that law of physics, or physical law of nature. Whereas the spiritual law, which is law of karma, involve mental intention. Involve whether that person is virtuous or not. That's why you have the five heavy karma. If you kill your parent, it's very, very heavy karma. If you kill an arahant or enlightened being, it's also very heavy karma. If you wound or harm the Buddha, it's also very heavy karma. If you cause Sikhism to the order of the monk, is also very heavy karma. So this involves mental intention, the moral causation. Okay, then we go on. In like manner, to use conventional terms, the body die and its karmic forces reborn in this life to the other. The last thought moment of this life perishes, conditioning another thought moment in the subsequent life. The new being is neither absolutely the same one, it has changed, nor totally different being. The same stream of karmic energy, there is merely a continuity of a particular life flux. Just that and nothing more. So this is how they explain it. Using the billiard ball. But what I try to explain to you is more exact. It involves mental intention and all your karmic accumulation. That's like the summation of everything you do, which is your karmic nature, the inheritance. So when the Buddha says we are born of our karma, it means whatever karma you have committed and accumulated, that one decides your birth. Then at the moment of birth, there are other criteria, like what we have gone through earlier on, karma. If you don't have any of the five heavy karma, then the close proximity karma will be the one having the greatest condition to manifest. You know what are close proximity karma? The thing that you often do in your life before you die. Your habitual tendency. If you have a livelihood that is not so honorable, if you kill and slaughter animals or chicken or cattle or whatever, then these are the things you always do. And the karmic is, before you die, that karmic consciousness will come and haunt you. That's why you will suffer like them. You will manifest that type of karmic condition. Then sometimes if you do a lot of good things, like the case of Auntie Tan, the Dana Queen, last time Brickfield, I think Tan Teck Beng's wife, Auntie Tan. She really Dana Queen, Katina Queen. So I remember during the early, the middle 80s, I think, when I was still in Brickfield, one day they say she was hospitalized, very sick. So they asked for us to go to the Bohi tree there and do the Bohi chanting. Then evoke power of merits for her to recover. I remember that day I was there too, so I participated. And because Auntie Tan was such a, I think she is very well known for her dana and all those things. So a lot of the Buddhist devotee at that time, they like her, and they have very strong support for her, and the faith to help her is very strong. So a big group of us were there with Dhammaratana, I remember, the monks and all that. So they were doing the puja chanting, then invoking power of merits for her to recover. And the energy that day was very strong, very, very strong. I felt it. Then immediately after that, the next day, I heard her, she recovered. And when we did it that time, those who were at the hospital together with her, you know what they heard from her? She was no longer conscious. The karmic conditioning take over. She was there like we meeting. She is hallucinating. The word is hallucinating. She tell people she do dana here, dana there, katina here, katina. She go everywhere doing dana and katina. But this is what she did throughout her life. Later part when she. The husband was the president of PMS that time, Mr. Tan Teck Wei. And she helped out a lot in the temple. She helped to do a lot of dana, raise a lot of funds, help Ramanda, support Ramanda, and support many of the temples, I remember. Some of the temples are in India and in remote places. Then they every time raise funds through their, what they call, I think they organize this, what they call, vegetarian dinner, or don't know what. They have it one or two occasions in a year, sometimes more than one or two. Every time they want to raise funds, they will organize that. And many devotees, they will actually support, buy the table and all those things. And I often get invited to these places. Initially, I also bought the tickets. Then later on, people invite me and my wife. That's why if you do all this wholesome thing regularly, the close proximity karma will come and condition your good rebirth. If you are a very serious cultivator, you are very determined, your faith very strong, you always chant the Buddha's name, develop affinity. All these are close proximity karma. They will arise to help you during moment of approaching death. Then sometimes you have meditated, you have developed the ability to be mindful, aware. When your mindfulness or heedfulness is very stable, you don't worry, you will know how to die. And you will not die hallucinating because you will know everything that is happening. Then your Dhamma can help you. Then you will understand all this and you will not be deluded by it. That's why when I was very young, that time I remember I was only, I think, about 8 years old, I think. I was so tired that day. As a kid, I went out and played until I was so tired, totally exhausted. Then I came home, I fell flat under the bed. And you know what happened? I was so weak until my craving force starts to dissipate. But very funny, that time I still a kid. I don't know how to meditate. I don't know what meditation is also. I don't even know what the Dhamma is. I went through the whole process without understanding. I was able to be fully aware inside that state of how the craving force dissipates. That how my consciousness come back into one and come out of my body. And then up there in the ceiling. Then I saw my body down there. Then later on, I saw my brother walk inside. He was talking to himself and he was looking for something. Then after that, I called him. He cannot hear me. I call him louder. He also cannot hear me. He just walk out like that. Then only I realize that time I don't even know is my consciousness. No, I'm out of my body. So I wanted to go into my body. Straight away, I want to go in. I cannot go in. No, it like doesn't belong to me. I can't go in. I can't take control of my body. Then, because of my past, I just know what to do. No, I give it a push. No, pop, I went in. No, the moment I went in, the first thing I want to confirm is I'm not dreaming. But I knew I'm not dreaming. It's very vivid, very clear, fully aware of the whole process. At that time, I didn't even know was a craving force dissipating until I developed the meditation later on. Then only I understand that it was the craving force. That thing that bind my consciousness to my body, when it dissipate, this whole thing came out. Then I went out straight away, asked my brother, did you went in the room just now and say all those things, then you walk out? He looked at me. He said, yes, but how did you know? He said, you were sleeping like a log. He said, I said, don't worry, I just want to confirm that. That's why later on when I developed the Dhamma, the understanding of the Dhamma, then when I meditate, I can understand all this very easily. I know what consciousness is. That's why there is no such thing as death. Nothing die. What die? Nothing die. It's just a consciousness separate. Actually, I die that time. But because not time yet, I think. I still got a mission. That's why I managed to went in. Then after that, I have this, what they call, understanding of what consciousness is. That's why I ask myself, I say, if at that age, without the Dhamma, without any understanding of what is meditation, I know how to die, you know. What does it mean? Means, I have developed this understanding before. And I will not go through the normal death process like normal people. I will have the awareness to be fully aware of all these things. And when that thing came out, my awareness was still there, you know. My awareness, which is the nature, together with the consciousness up there. Oh. That's why a lot of people cannot understand. So, when you are a kid, also you know how to die, means you have developed that training before. And now that you have developed the Dhamma understanding and the mindfulness, you will understand all this. So there is no more fear during death. And you will understand clearly the meaning of nothing die. You are not what you think. The form and mind is not you. That human being is not you. That consciousness is not you. The random of consciousness inside and all those things. All this movement, you will have the clear understanding. So this is the beauty of meditation, awareness. Then you know all this can be carried over life after life with the understanding of life. Especially when you start to understand what that karmic nature is, what the mundane mind is, what that true mind and true nature is. So all this will give you wisdom, understanding. Then with that understanding, you will have clear wisdom with regards to who are you, what are you. And you will not be deluded like normal human being. You will know how to go through life with understanding. And you will also understand what death is. Nothing die. So all these are delusion, grabs on to, cling on to by living beings who don't have the understanding. Okay, we managed to finish chapter 29. Yeah? So chapter 30, I think we leave it for next week. Huh? So chapter 30 is about moral responsibility. It's mainly about karma. The Dhammapada saying, by self is one defiled, by self is one purified. So here, self means one. Yeah? Self means one here. The Buddha teach non-self. Then here he say, by self. It's just like law of karma. You, he say, you are born of your karma, heir to your karma, condition and supported by, and you are what you are because of your karma. Here, he's referring to your form and mind, understand? So here, by self is one defile, it's your form and mind, you understand? And that form and mind is impermanent, dependent originating, not a permanent unchanging entity that you can cling on to, hold on to and say, this is me, this is I. That's why this understanding will be very clear to you, very deep to you. So the form and mind is not you. But that form and mind has an entity. That's why the Buddha say, you, that form and mind is born of karma. But that one is not the real you, understand? The real you, which is the eternal nature, is different, understand? Because whatever that is impermanent, dependent, originating, condition arising, can never be a permanent, unchanging entity that you can say, this is me, this is I. Therefore, this one can own things. All this can be mine. No such thing. Where within the condition world, everything is dependent, originating, condition arising, not a permanent, unchanging entity. That's why it's not you. But the condition world has its condition dhamma. The condition world, through the law of karma, recognizes relationship, understand? That's why there is such thing as you and me. Father, mother, brother, sister, friend, neighbor, enemy, and all those things. It recognizes relationship. That's why the five heavy karma recognizes. If you kill father, mother, patricide, matricide, it's very heavy karma. And the moral causation recognizes relationship. So this is the aspect where you need to really develop the understanding. The unconditioned Dhamma and the conditioned Dhamma, they are two different sets of Dhamma. When you apply to the conditioned world and want to live life, you have to use the conditioned Dhamma. You have to accord and follow conditioned Dhamma. Means like this form and mind, or this so-called human being. It may not be you, but it's related to you, to karma. That's why this one has its duty, understand? This one cannot simply do things. That's why by self is one defiled. By this form and mind, the self is one purified. Everything depends on this vehicle and tool. Where this is karmically conditioned for our nature to come to this existential world, to live life, to experience life, to do what we want with life. So this is like a vehicle and a tool for you to come, for you to use. So use it with understanding. Do not be deceived by it, even though not you, but it is subject to karma. You cannot simply do things. You have a duty. There's a right duty, it's a right Dhamma. So under the salutation to the Sangha, the Buddha put it very clear. If you are an Arya, yeah, you will have this four thing. We always chant Swakato Bhagavato, Supatipanno Bhagavato Savaka Sangho. Our good conduct is the disciple of the Buddha. Then of right conduct is the disciple of the Buddha. Then of wise conduct is the disciple of the Buddha. And the last one is of dutiful conduct. You do your duty very well. It's the order of the disciple of the Buddha. So they have these four great qualities. They have very impeccable or good conduct. They conduct themselves in a very impeccable way, very good way. Then they are very righteous of right conduct. They do things in accordance with their understanding and conscience, and they are very righteous. And of wise conduct means they have wisdom. Then the last one is they know this form of mind not them, but this form of mind subject to karma. That's why they still do their duty. They still meditate. They still keep their sila. Understand? Then they still develop the avoidance of evil, cultivation of wholesomeness, purification of mind through meditation, to develop the right view, to awaken, to free their mind from all suffering. So all these are the quality and mark of an enlightened disciple of the Buddha. So if you want to know you have progressed or not, you just check these four things. Do you have impeccable or good conduct? Means action, speech and thought. Do you conduct yourself appropriately, beautifully? Then the second one is, are you righteous? Do you have this right conduct? Are you righteous in what you do? You are not a hypocrite. You are very honorable. You are very righteous because you do the correct thing. Then you have wisdom. The third one is you have wisdom. Then the fourth one is you do your duty very well. You understand this from my mind, even though not me, but it's subject to karma. That's why you choose take care karma. Means take care of your right duty. Right duty is very deep in this understanding. As a form of mind, you have a lot of duty. You know what duty do you hold on? If you are a son or a daughter, you have a duty towards your parent. Understand? Then later on, as you grow up, you will have maybe your teachers, yeah, that you have to do your duty towards your brothers, your sister, your neighbor. Then later when you are married, your duty as a spouse, your duty as a father or a mother. Then you have your duty towards society, towards the environment, towards the collective consciousness of your nation, or your vicinity. Then also your right duty towards this law of karma. So all these are part and parcel of the existential world wisdom. Means you know this form of mind, even though not you, but it has its duty towards this law of karma. So that duty will manifest through understanding. Yeah. So this right view will create this type of right understanding. Then you will know how to do your duty in accordance with nature's law, especially the law of karma. So when you know how to do your duty very well, you will be rewarded. That's why my teacher Achayantrai always tell me, right duty is right dhamma. Dhamma is in Thailand, stand for Dhamma. When you have right duty, means you understand Dhamma. That's why I always say, right duty is right Dhamma. If you don't have right duty, you don't have the Dhamma. So the easiest check is whether your conduct is impeccable or not. Your action, speech and thought process. Whether you have right view or not. Whether you are righteous or not. Whether you have wisdom or right view with regards to law of karma, how you function as a human being. Chitta niyama. From karma niyama to chitta niyama. Then the last one is truth, Dhamma Niyama. So when you have right view with regards to karma, mind, and the essential Dhamma, then you have wisdom. You will know how to act. You will know how to live life. And you will be able to transcend life, because with those wisdom connected to your form and mind, you don't suffer anymore. Then you can live life to the fullest. You can live life beautifully. Then you can experience all of the beauties and wonders of life. And you can truly live the third phase of Dhamma, means the noble life of enlightened being. Then you will be very blessed. Then you will have a mind that is so beautiful, always at peace, always calm, peaceful, quiet, tranquil, with joy, with understanding, and no more suffering. That's why this type of understanding is so different. It can liberate our mind and free us completely. Okay, what's the time now? Oh, still got 15 minutes, huh? Correct, huh? Yeah, 15 to 16 minutes. Okay, you got any question? Do you have any question with regards to rebirth, with regards to the Dhamma, or what we have discussed tonight? I think we are going to finish this book quite soon. Chapter 30. Page 469. Total is how much? Oh, 700 over pages. 720. Oh, not much lah. About 100 over pages. I think the rest we can go through quite fast, because the rest are a lot of things we have already done before. The way to Nibbana, there are two parts, chapter 35-36. Then, what attains Nibbana, Nibbanic bliss? The 10 grades of happiness and all those things. Oh, chapter 33 is Nibbana. Quite interesting. Then before that, rebirth as viewed by others. There you got quite a number of topics. A note on the doctrine of karma and rebirth as belief in the West. Then there is a topic on samsara. Then chapter 31 is what? Oh, karmic descent and karmic ascent. Okay. So slowly we are moving in. Any question? Anybody want to add anything? So far, clear or not, the teaching? When it comes to rebirth, it's just that death consciousness condition the rebirth consciousness. Nothing transmigrate, nothing gets carried over. But the karmic nature is a nature by itself, understand? It is a nature, it's not a being, it cannot come out and live life. But this nature is like your spiritual nature. It support you karmically, then the other will support you spiritually. So you have two nature. Always remember, karmic nature and spiritual nature. Some of you may be new. I think you may not heard of all this. Okay, maybe I make use of that time to explain. You see. there is this karmic nature. Then there is another one. We call it the spiritual nature. So this one is karmic nature, this one is spiritual nature. Then as a human being, you have a form and mind, as usual. So this is your mind or consciousness that is trapped inside your body. Then this is the physical body. Okay, so these two you add up is the five aggregate of form and mind. So this one is the form aggregate. Then this one is the four aggregates of mind. So this one we have gone through last Tuesday. Before I create of mind, you just inquire what can your mind do. Your mind can feel, can perceive. Then can arise mental states, sankhara, mental activity, mental volition, mental formation, mental whatever your mind can do. Then the last thing that your mind can do, it can become conscious of things. Conscious of what you see, what you hear, what you smell, what you taste, what you tactile feel and think. So these two combined become what we call the human being. Human being. So this human being is essentially your five aggregates. So this one is five aggregates. So this five aggregate is not a permanent unchanging entity, because this one is dependent originating, condition arising, causal phenomena. The physical body, like we know, made of element, no knowing, so it cannot be you. The four element goes the way of nature. Then the mind is just thought, consciousness. This one is the mundane mind. They are dependent originating too, condition arising. Every thought arises and passes away. Every feeling arises and passes away. Every perception arises and passes away. Every activity of mind, sankhara, mental state, they arise and pass away. Every consciousness is the same. But when they arise and pass away, you die. You didn't die. Then they can never be you. If they were you, the moment they die, you should die with it. Then the question is, if the aggregates of mind and the body is not you, then why did they arise in you? Then who are you? What are you? So according to the Buddha, initially the first thing that happened is your karmic nature. So this one is your summation. Summation of all of your karmic volition. All the life that you have taken since the distant past until now, life after life, all this karmic volition, you add them up, they become your karmic nature. You understand? So this karmic nature is responsible for your coming. That's why this form and mind is born of born of karma. And this one, because it's born of karma, is also subject to karma. Understand? So this is the human being. This karmic nature, the moment you are born, you already start to inherit. Understand? That's why the Buddha said, we are all, not necessarily a human being. Our case is a human being. But if it's others, it's living being. Understand? Animal, non-human, devas, petas, or whatever. Yeah. So this one, the form and mind, the moment you arise through rebirth, you are born of your karma. And you inherit everything, heir to your karma, conditioned and supported by. And you are what you are because of your karma. So you cannot blame people for what your condition is. Yeah. So if you want to have good birth, good life, good condition, you better take care of karma. Then the karma take care of your life. So this is how it works. Yeah. Then every life you come as a form and mind, whether human being or living being, you need to develop the meditative understanding until you can connect to your true mind, your true nature. If you cannot connect, you cannot inherit the spiritual nature. So this spiritual nature is different. This one, you cannot understand, you cannot get in touch with it until you know how to meditate, until you know how to connect to your true mind. The moment you connect, you will start to inherit from here. You will start to develop a lot of understanding from your past. But before you connect, there is no way. That's the reason why life is so difficult. You understand? Because all of the teaching actually comes from here, the spiritual nature, the spiritual understanding. So without your ability to meditate and connect, you can never get to know this, you can never inherit anything from there. So what I'm trying to tell you is, if you don't follow the Buddha's teaching to build up your karmic nature, then learn how to meditate through your vows, your aspiration, your determination to have this understanding life after life, you don't stand a chance to connect to your spiritual nature. And you find it very difficult to progress along the path of Dhamma. That's why you must know how to meditate. And to know how to meditate, you must cultivate blessing, wholesomeness, make aspiration, make vows, develop the spiritual faculty and all those things. So all this you can do provided you know how to do. So the best way is to plant the Bodhi seed deep into your consciousness, so that this Bodhi mind can be activated. So that life after life, whenever you come, you will have this understanding. Then you must determine through the Bodhisattva vow, the right views and all those things, the right understanding. Then you must also learn how to vow to break karmic obstruction. Yeah. Then cultivate affinity with great beings. Seek their blessing, protection and guidance. Then only you have the condition to connect. Yeah. Then your vow will take you along. Your understanding will take you along. Technically, you don't have to really do much work after you have planted the Bodhi mind. The first stage of Bodhi mind development means make that determination. The yellow card I give to you, you go back and read. It's also in the blue book. That whole thing, you make affirmation, determine strongly, front and back. Then with this planted, because the first stage of Bodhi mind development is very easy. You just have to determine sincerely through faith. Yeah? You only need to determine and make this aspiration or vow to walk this way. That's it. Finish. And you fulfill the first stage. Yeah. But you have to make sure all this goes into your nature. Means when you plant that seed, the Bodhi seed, it has all of the very, very strong faith, understanding, and determination, and aspiration. When you vow, really determine to have this Bodhi seed planted, to arise the Bodhi mind, that will have all this understanding in future, whenever you come or you choose to come, and all this right view. Yeah. So that when you come with this understanding, you will know how to meditate. You will know how to break karmic obstruction. You will know how to cultivate affinity with all the great beings. Yeah. And you will know how to develop all this understanding. Mm. Then you will understand the five aggregate of form and mind. Then rupang anicang, rupang anatta, vedana anicang, vedana anatta, sanya anicang, sanya anatta, sankara anicang, sankara anatta, then vinyanang anicang, vinyanang anatta, then sabbe sankara anicang, sabbe sankara dukkang, sabbe dhamma anatta. All this will become very clear to you. That's why life after life, in future when you come, you have no more problem. That's the reason why when I look back, this life, this segmented life, this form of mind, I didn't do anything actually. Technically, I just echoed and flow. Everything was already prepared through my understanding in the past. Yeah, Vincent. Yes, pass the mic to Vincent. Yeah. There, at the back. Yeah. For the recording. Yeah. This one is really useful. Push it out. Push it out all the way. Yes.
Brother, I want to ask you for some advice I can convey to my friend.
Okay.
Some people, actually this happened to his wife. Apparently his wife had a spirit nature, not spiritual nature.
I know.
Like every time disturbed, is it?
Oh.
So sometimes I was telling him, why don't you come and listen to the Dhamma? Because he stay in Subang, okay. See? At least you clear your mind, whatever. Okay. But somehow, you know, he will go to this temple, that temple, this temple, that temple, see? And sometimes he says, my wife is okay already. Then after that, he says, does the staff still have this problem, you know? So it's like very easy
to... No, it's the coming obstruction. Never mind, because you make sure they are ready, otherwise don't bring them. If they are not really ready or willingly, means there is coming obstruction. Understand? So this coming obstruction, we cannot interfere. They have to clear themselves. If they want
so
to have an understanding.
Think it's own cause or what?
No, you have to see whether the condition or not. When there is condition, then it will happen. You remember Alicia? When you and your wife, Anna, talked
but she
to her.
It's not spirit, is it?
No. Her case is a very...
But this one is actually
You remember, when you asked me in Jambaka, I said, no problem, if he wants to come, let her come. 3-4 months later only she come, you know, you realize or not? It's not immediate. Because when they feel that they are ready, means there is condition. And do you know what happened? The first night she come, she was so full of suffering. Sorrow, depression, lamentation, negativity of mind state, that fear, that intense, what they call negative vibration was so strong when she walked in. He did not even look at me or look at others. He just isolated. But the moment we start, I talk about the first number two, second number two, then she listening attentively. It's relating to something that she gone through. She start to understand that at least there is somebody who understand what she went through. Then she saw the light at the end of the tunnel. That's why after that, he keep on chasing Sui An for the recording. And he keep on listening where she wants to seek an answer. This one got conditioned. So if you try to force him, no use. Where the karmic obstruction is there, no way. This one, she can come, is because there is condition. So people who got condition, when they come, then they listen, they ask for forgiveness, they can break the karmic obstruction. Then they can receive. And they will turn around and become very beautiful. But if they don't have condition,
But this one is like, according to what this friend told me, is that it, I think something is entering inside.
Don't worry, all this is karmic, understand? Karmic obstruction and karmic conditioning behind. This is something that they have done in the past. So that's why this will come and obstruct them. No matter how you talk to them, they will resist. Then even if one day you can convince them, when they come, they will get into trouble. We have a coming obstruction not clear. So not clear means you didn't off the thing completely. Press it down, Vincent. Fully off it. No, off it, off it. Oh, off it. One more slot, I think. Oh, okay. Yeah, no off already, yes. Just now got a bit of distortion. So what they have to understand is, if the karmic obstruction is still there, they cannot receive. And not only they cannot receive, they have the karmic conditioning to get into trouble. You understand? That's why I say, don't bring them if there is no condition. Just let things be. Because all this you cannot force. You must have condition. If there is no condition, they come. They are lucky if nothing happened to them. Then they just disappear. But if they got any negativity of thought or mind due to their past karmic thing, all this will hit back. That's why I always say, don't bring people unless there is condition. Yeah. So far so good, because a lot of those who came, they have condition. Yeah. Because the Kayamita know, don't be too eager to help people or bring people. Like last Thursday class, somebody came and see me, one of the Kayamita, Matthew, can you help? Then I said, what is it? He said, my cousin brother got, I think, cancer, don't know, very serious. He said, can do something. Then I asked her, is he a Buddhist? Do you really know what the family want? Do you seek their consent? Do they really want this? She looked at me, must ask one. What if you do and they come to know and they don't want and they curse you and do all those things, what happen? If they are Christian, how? You go and ask for Buddhist type of thing. Then what if they don't want this and you think you are trying to help, do good, you get into trouble, understand? That's why I say, if you really want to help, make sure there is condition. If they are willing to listen, then that is the beginning, understand? Then do some explanation. Then tell them, you decide yourself, because many people have benefited, recovered. So if you are interested, you let me know. Then I can arrange for you to meet up or attend the class. Then find out for yourself. That is a better way. Do you understand? Otherwise, it can have a lot of problem. Then only she realized, I better ask them. Even though they are your cousin, you understand? Sometimes the spouse may have a different view about religion, understand? Why you so capable, my husband? No, you simply go and ask them to seek all this or do all this for them. They don't like. So we have to be sensitive and we have to understand all this is karmic. You can't just want to help. No point. When we have the Dhamma, we accord and flow. Got condition, we will manifest. No condition, we just let things be. You do whatever that is appropriate at that moment. not everybody can have the condition to receive this teaching or this help. Okay? Vincent, yeah. So, remember, because there was one occasion many, many years back when we started. Yeah, after people request, they don't know how they request because they were actually Kayanamitas. So their direct loved one, there was no problem because their family involved. So we did this blessing and other thing, then they recover, turn around. Then everybody started to request. Wow, I straight away told Suyan, stop all this. We are not doing all this. Then only luckily after that, I think they all understand. Then last time they go through Suyan. So luckily, then those who came direct to me, I talked to them. Then because of that, it didn't tone down for many years. Then I think the previous Thursday or last Thursday, one more new one came and asked me. So I need to explain a bit. So hopefully with this understanding, you all will know what to do. You want to help people, you reflect how you get the condition to develop all this understanding. It's not by accident. It's through your karmic affinity. Through your karmic, what they call affinity and condition. Then when you have that, it's because you have planted them in the past. Then sometimes people who come with problem one, other people bring one, is because they have helped people before in the past. Like this life, Vincent, you help people. In future, you will have people who will bring you to see people who has the understanding and they will help you back where you have the condition. But people who don't have the condition, the coming obstruction can be very strong. And all this you will learn later. After you connect to the spiritual nature, you develop your meditative understanding, then you awaken, then you will understand all this, and you will understand what I meant, and then you will know what is accord and flow, what is the meaning of condition, you will manifest and do something. No condition, you will not do anything, because otherwise it becomes interference. Then you will develop suffering, because you lack proper deep understanding. It's just like when you describe, you say your husband tell you this, then later tell you they go here, they go there, then later tell you she okay already, then later not okay again. Then when you listen to all this, sometimes if you are not careful, you know what happened. You may develop a negative perception. This guy don't trust me. Never mind. Because you will have this type of thinking. Then sometimes because he's your good friend, maybe they are your good friends, then you want to help them, then you are too eager to help, then you try to convince them in a more, maybe to you it's like more strongly so that they can come. It's not the intention to get them to come, no use. If they have the condition, they come, then it's very beneficial. If they don't have the condition, they come, sometimes it can have karmic repercussion. So in order to avoid all this, just let things be until there is condition. When there is condition, you will know, they will respond. Otherwise, you just tell them, then like Alicia, okay, after many months, they will call you back or inform you. It's just like last time, Chris Yap from Klang. He helped to bring Miss Lee to my class, same. He talked to her, then the thing turned down. Because he remembered, I said, no condition to bring. Then many weeks later, suddenly Miss Lee called him. He said, Chris, you told me there is this brother Teo. I would like to meet up with him. All of a sudden, then Chris said, no problem. First time, I will bring you there. So he go and fetch her and bring her. Then everything just connect. That night itself, Tuesday class also. They heard about the Saturday class. Saturday class when? After the meditation, he straight away invite me to teach at Wu Ping Sing Se. At that time, she was going through a phase of very, very tough patch because the Sifu passed away not long. Then later on, the Kuku also passed away. So these are the conditions. Okay, we better end. Otherwise, take up too much of your time. Okay, let us rejoice. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, we will do the sharing of merit, transfer of merit. Then we end. Akasata Chyobhumata Devanaga Mahindika Punyantang Anumoditwa Chirang Rakantu Loka Sasana Ita Wata Chaamehi Sampadan Punya Sampadan Sabbe Deva Anumodantu Sabba Sampati Siddhya Idang menyatinang hotu sukita hontunya tayo. Idang menyatinang hotu sukita hontunya tayo. Idang menyatinang hotu sukita hontunya tayo. Devo asatukalena sasa sampati hetu ca. Fito bawa tuloko ca. Raja bawa tu damiko imina punyang kamena mami bala samagamo satang samagamo hotu yawa niwana patia sadu sadu sadu. Okay, pay respect mindfully to Sakyamuni Buddha, Kanyi Bodhisattva, and all the other worthy ones. Let me end. So tomorrow is holiday, don't worry. Today, a little bit late, never mind. Oh, for those who came in late, Chui and Han, we have Vision here. You know Vision? You don't know him? Chui know him? Yeah. You know, the Klang's Kwan's son. He's going to be ordained on the birthday next month, 12 June, in Rayong there, Achanan there. What is the name of the temple already? Wat Machan, yes. So I cannot remember. Yeah, should rejoice. The first Kailamita to ordain. What is it? For good. It's not temporary. This one is for good. Sadhu to you. You have the good parami. You will do well. Have faith. Wherever you are, the Dhamma will be with you. You must have faith. Sadhu. No problem. Okay. You can have some food.